You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Welcome back, friends. Please make sure your pod seat and tray table are in their upright and locked position. The airlock is sealed and docking clamps have been released for an on-time departure to the Functional Nerdverse. Hey, nerdlings. We are back with this week's guest, Zin E. Rocklin, who is here to talk about their novella from Tor.com, Flowers for the Sea, which has been described as a lush gothic fantasy, which pretty much sounds like Tracy Catnip to me. So, Zin, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that it is catnip to you because I love cats. So this is great.
Okay. Yeah, we're all on the same wavelength here. So we would represent the cats right now. There's one literally laying behind me like a lumbar pillow.
Aww.
But if I reveal him, then he's gonna start stomping on the keyboard and then all is lost. And you know, Patrick at least is able to sequester his recording environment from Shadow, who
I locked mine upstairs. Throughout the course of the morning, I've heard him up there just screaming the song of his people because he is both starving. He has no food, no water that he could possibly drink because I haven't touched it in the last 10 minutes. And he's just freezing cold because there's no sunbeam coming directly onto his bed on the windowsill.
You put the sun in the wrong place, you bastard.
Yes. Yes. How dare you? Move the sun.
Oh my gosh.
I woke up this morning, just to let you guys know, I woke up this morning and I'm going to do this on the video because it just makes for great radio. But I woke up this morning to this.
Oh,
this is the nose bat.
This is the paw in the face going, hey, come on, come on. Mm-hmm. My food's empty. And I'm like, your food's not empty. Leave me alone. I knew what he was doing. Yeah. And I'm like, your food's not empty. I went downstairs. The food was not empty, but it wasn't fresh. I hadn't poured a little bit of dry in there.
Yeah, you gotta like it's like when the waiter is supposed to come by and be like, "Can I freshen your water? Can I just top that off for you?" Yeah, it's kind of move right there. He's like, "Just so you know, this is going to be a 12% tip. Absolutely. You're gonna have to work me up from here, sir." You have a fur baby who would otherwise be demanding your attention, Zin?
No, I wish I did. I live in an apartment that does not allow cats and dogs, even though there are a couple people who have snuck cats and dogs in here.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends with cats and dogs that are mine, essentially.
Right. I do as well.
I get updated. Yeah, I get updated photos from them, you know, making sure everything's all right. I go to bat for them. You know,
I have friends who think that I don't care about them because all I ask for are the pictures of their pets.
Well, I mean, they're not wrong in a way. I mean, you care about them because they are a vector by which you get pet excess. So, I mean, that's not wrong.
I literally yesterday had a conversation with a friend over text where I sent them a little cartoon that was someone saying, "Oh, look, you have a puppy." No, actually, it's an adult dog, you know, 20 years old. About, no, it's a puppy. No, it's a, you know, I've had them for 20. It's a puppy.
A puppy.
This is my thing. All dogs are puppies. And I sent that to them and they're like, "You should get that tattooed on your body somewhere. All dogs are puppies."
All dogs are puppies. I agree.
I want the bumper sticker too. There's like the sticker that says, "Tell your dog I said hi."
That's really good. That's really good. I'm not a bumper sticker kind of person, but I might just that might just shift me a little bit.
Well, I have the decal on the back of the car. That's the police box, Doctor Who's TARDIS. So I could probably get I could probably get something on the other side that said, "Tell your dog I said hi." That'd be kind
sure.
Of
cool. Yeah, symmetry. You want to balance?
Wolf,
you know,
get some bad wolf somewhere there too.
Yeah, just get all that look. So while you're talking about decking out your vehicle here, he gives me shit all the time because I don't watch Doctor Who. Like, not watching Doctor Who is different than like
not like literally knowing nothing about it. Like if you marinate in the Geekverse as we three do, you pick it up like in the same way that if you go to the right or depending on your perspective, wrong concert, you don't have to smoke the weed, but you're going to come away high because there's nothing going on around you, right? Right? It's like that.
So, well, and by the time this episode airs, two new episodes of Doctor Who will have aired on BBC America with Jodie Whittaker. I'll be very excited.
Nice. Yes. Yes, indeed. So you're talking about tricking out your ride with all the decals and stuff here. And so I can't help but kind of loop this back to the idea of the unusual ride. And I'm not even being metaphorical. I'm being literal about Flowers for the Sea. Like, we are on an arc, like an actual arc of the survivors of a world flood here. And I think one of the reasons why I'm so kind of stoked about that as a conceit for fantasy is I think the idea of all the characters are together on a ship is something that usually gets pulled into through science fiction, like the idea of a generation ship or like the crew of the ship or what have you. The idea of like displacing that into a fantasy context, like what does it mean to everyone? The whole story exists on this ship. Means something really different when it's not like we are traveling to a new world, but like, no, for real, we're just trying not drown. We're trying to pick up these pieces here. So I would love to hear about where this idea comes from and like, where are you taking us in this story?
So I have a healthy respect, AKA fear of the open ocean. And I just wanted to write something that was claustrophobic and something that was tapping into my own fear, just to make it a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
I didn't want to necessarily have a character that feared the open ocean, but I wanted to like experience the open ocean in a way that was safe for me and still had me on the edge a little bit. But yeah, I had finished reading An Unkindness of Ghosts, which is just perfection. And by River Solomon, and I really like the idea of, like you were saying, a generational ship. But I wanted the circumstances to be different. So I don't know. I kind of wanted to mess with that a little bit and mess with the idea of cruise ships and how people like want to do it. But it's like, imagine being stuck on it and not being able to get off. And not too long ago, they announced some kind of like Royal Caribbean announced some kind of extra long.
I think it's some absurd number of days, like in the two or three hundreds or something.
Yeah, it's like 200 and something days.
Oh my god!
And it's like, why would you want to do that? This is going to be a lot of bodies flown overboard and just...
I mean, if there's anything the pandemic should have taught people who don't actually live alone, it's that if you spend 200 plus days with your only world being this literally very contained space with the same people over and over again, things are going to get gnarly.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Gnarly indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So, yeah, I just wanted to explore that and explore the tensions that would rise from any kind of situation, whether or not it was everyone getting along or... Mm-hmm. You know, any kind of situation, it's just disaster regardless.
Yeah.
Have you seen Avenue 5, I think is the show?
Yes. On HBO. It's HBO, right? Yeah, I absolutely love that show. I love that show. I hope it comes back.
It's similar to what you're talking about, because they're all trapped on the ship. And there's nothing they can do. Of course, it's worse because there's basically corpses orbiting the ship.
Yes.
People who died. Because they thought they knew how to eject these people into space that had passed, but they didn't have enough thrust. So basically the ship itself had enough so that the people are circling
the gravitational pull of the ship is now, oh no.
Yep.
Oh no.
So, you know, go to the window and look out. And every once in a while, here comes the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I tell you what, I have never considered a cruise. I do not think that I am the person that could do that. I don't think, to your point, it's like, I would go nuts. I would go absolutely nuts. I don't think I could take it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I could if it were like for a very limited duration. Like, I think I would top out at a week.
I think your Husbies and your kids all on a Disney cruise in a very small cabin.
I did not say Disney cruise days. Or all of them. Sure. No, if those are the conditions from which we're bargaining, then this is not happening. So, yeah. No, I could see myself doing maybe one of those like week long excursions where you depart from, say, Washington State or something, and then you take a cruise northward along like the Alaska shoreline, and it's like a wildlife exposure thing where you can, you know, see whales and you know, where it's not like, and now we're going to stop at this place. It's a tourist trap of some kind that's full of people who are being sort of forced to cater to your extremely artificial needs and so forth. I think, you know, it's sort of funny because even if you're not literally afraid of water, the sea, ocean, lake, whatever the size of body of water is, I think that the idea of being on a ship directionless or adrift or with purpose is sort of intrinsically fearful for people at some level, because the sea is no human being's home. Like, none of us live there. None of us sort of come from it in the sense of it being where we're really supposed to be. And in that sense, it's not wildly different from space, I guess.
Yeah. Space is another, like, space is definitely a fear in the sense of like the dark unknown and things like that. But it's a little bit further down the list because it's not completely reasonable.
Yeah. Like, when would I ever go there? You know, it's not, exactly. It's not, you know, whereas, you know, the sea is right here. It's with us. It pays rent on this planet too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read something once that said, you know, we send pilots into space a lot of times, pilots, when really we should be sending submariners, people who are used to being in a submarine in a enclosed space for months at a time without ever seeing the sun. They're always in this enclosed space. They would be better suited to space than our pilots.
Mm. Hmm.
I thought it was interesting.
Argument. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it in those terms before. Yeah. So one of the things that I've been thinking about as I've been, you know, I've read the first few pages of Flowers for the Sea, and I've kind of peeked at some of the reviews for it. Try not to spoil myself because I want to go there. I love reading novellas. They're one of my favorite lengths. Patrick knows this is true because my pick of the weeks lately have been, a lot of them have been novellas.
You have been on a novella kick lately. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been going on for quite a while. But the one thing that stood out to me as I was kind of like looking at the conversation that surrounds not just this book, but other things that you've written, Zen, is like, I think people think you're hard to read. I mean, in the sense of like that you are challenging them, not just like emotionally or in the sense of like, ooh, this really made me think, but in the sense of you're not really holding the reader's hand to make sure that everything is completely explained and that they've really got to do some of that work for themselves. And I'm interested in that. Like, what is it that makes that feel like, now this is the way I need to do my craft. I've got to kind of hold things tight a little bit.
I used to be so much worse. I used to like, it was to the point where like, I think I started reading adult books when I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
Fear Street was my favorite series as when I was about 6 or 7. And then from there, it was like, okay, I'm ready for Clive Barker. So I was reading Clive Barker.
Time to level up.
Yeah, time to level up. Like at 9 and 10 and, mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And Douglas Clegg. And so I like, as a reader, I am 100% about being completely invested. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you're completely invested, you're along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And you want to figure things out and you want to have that puzzle box type of thing. So I think it's something that I want to challenge my readers as well as take them along for the ride. And if they are completely invested, it's something that is rewarding at the very end. And if you're not invested, I totally understand, because there are definitely books that are out there that aren't for me and I have not been, mm-hmm. you know, completely about and things like that. So it's like, I totally understand. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. But yeah, I like the challenge. I like to give that challenge on.
Well, I think it's good too, to sort of have a sense of what you as a reader want this sort of thing, thrive in this sort of thing. And you want readers, I think, who want similar things to what you want, to what you want as the writer, you know, and that those are the people that you're really writing for. I mean, outside of yourself, we all write for ourselves. If you're not, I think that may be the only way in which I'm comfortable saying you're doing it wrong when it comes to writing. Like, if on some level you're not writing for yourself, you're doing it wrong. Like, it needs, because damn, it's so much work. So much work.
Yeah, it is.
So you better damn well turn it into something where when you sit back from the keyboard, you're like, okay, I was all right. I was pretty good. Like, yeah. I'm making something here. Like, this is doing it for me. But you don't, you know, it's like the old P.T. Barnum sort of thing. Some of the people, some of the time, all the people, all the time. You can't have all the people all the time. So you got to know what it is you're going for.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it helps build your direction for other projects as well. Like, it helps you have that foundation so that you're not wavering entirely just for one particular group of people who need their hands held. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sort of building a readership. Yeah. In a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that must be, so this is your first, unless I'm wrong, and correct me if I'm wrong, definitely do that, independently published in the sense of like standalone longer form work, although you've done a lot of short form stuff and essays and short stories and contributed to many anthologies. And so that it, in a sense, I don't know with how people, I don't know if you have a perspective on this, Patrick, do you suppose people start building up their readership with the short fiction and then follow people into their longer works, or just... I guess it can go both ways, but
well, that's the way it used to be. So that was the, when you look at TradPub, you know, traditional publishing, that was the path that authors took, especially in science fiction. You started with short stories because that was where the markets were. You had, you know, Asimov's and fantasy and science fiction, and you had all these magazines that were doing that, and so you did short first and you kind of built your audience, and then eventually mm-hmm. you were able to do novels. Mm-hmm. And that flipped a little bit as you got into the, I want to say mid to late 80s into the 90s and 2000s, you had more people starting with novels. And then what would happen a lot of times, I'm explaining this, but I'm just doing it from the standpoint of the person who kind of stood back a little bit and watched as I was going. You had a lot of people writing novels and then traditional publishing coming back to them going, but you need to do short stories. You need to also do short stories. And so then you had people doing novels and then trying to do short stories. And what kind of exploded that was ebooks, because ebooks allowed for more novella length. There was a small market for novellas, but then as ebooks, and then, you know, ebooks happened, it opened up the market for novellas, and then Tor.com kind of made it legit. Right?
Yeah. Well, in the sense of, I think there's a certain type of person who does their reading and does their like finding of literature through ebooks, right? And yeah. Like there's a Venn diagram here, right? Like it can still be the same person who's buying physical books from publishers that show up in, you know, Barnes and Nobles and local bookstores and Amazon and whatever else. But it doesn't necessarily overlap for everybody.
Yeah.
And right. So it became a space for folks who I think want to write stories that are very crafted and in this very specific kind of sense of size and scope and so on to have a place to go that, I don't know. I mean, certainly the online publishing, it's not that it's not legit, but I think that it doesn't necessarily give people the reach or the audience that they want because it's such a full place. It's crowded out there.
Yeah.
But you know, if you've got tor.com and now Subterranean's doing it too, and Fireside Fiction, I believe, is Fireside, moving towards doing some. Yeah.
Neon Hemlock.
Well, you also
is new. Mm-hmm.
You also had your short story market shrink to where there weren't as like that used to be the market. That used to be where everybody was, and now it's kind of shrunk, and you have a lot of specialty stuff there. And you have holdouts and you have these folks like, you know, Clark's World and Lightspeed in science fiction and fantasy. And then you still have Asimov's and different ones, but there's not as many. There was an explosion for a while and now it's kind of shrunk down, I think, to like a manageable market at this point. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I guess
when Tracy makes me be all serious, it just kills the whole momentum of the podcast. And everybody gets really muted.
No,
go wave a Funko Pop. Go grab something off your desk and wave it in front of us. But no, like seriously, I think I kind of admire, not kind of, like I'm not going to qualify that. I do admire people who are able to build their career out of novelettes and novellas and short stories and things like that, because I am more what you were describing a couple minutes ago, Patrick, where my first thing that went out into the world really was a novel. Because I don't know how to do short, like, which is not, that's not a humble brag. That is a legitimate problem. Like it's a statement about the way that I think about stories and the way that I craft them that shows that I really have some blind spots, which is kind of an ableist way of framing it. So I'll reframe it as saying like I have some real gaps, you know, in my ability to kind of address this stuff. And so I get excited when I see people who are taking advantage of what relative short form work can do to get their footprint and get their voice out there, because it feels to me like it is a place that's teaching all of us to sort of think about stories differently and to sort of see that those different size stories in a way that, you know, might not normally have gotten the attention that you see novels get that get to sit on bookshelves and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I think there's something to having, you know, writing a novel myself. I've been writing a novel for feels like eons. There's something about, I think to me there's a credit due for those who write novels primarily, like that thought process, that how that breaks down in the head and how that breaks down into the page, like that's awesome. So I don't think it's gaps at all. I think it's just your specialty is novels.
Well, so I appreciate you affirming me.
About 90% of the short stories I have ever written have become novels. Because it just happens. It just happens that way. Yep. It's like, okay, I'm going to start writing a short story. And I sit down and 75,000 words later, I'm sitting going, I don't think there's a market for a 75,000 word short story right now.
It's a bit niche.
Huh.
Niche.
Yeah. May have to do something different with this. Yeah. And it didn't help that I would actually write a short story and I would take it to a critique group and there would invariably be someone sitting there going, this would make a great novel. And then the back of my brain's going, ding, 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 novel, 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 write it.
Yeah, yeah. My day job is I teach English classes at a high school for gifted students, and
X-Men.
Boarding school for gifted students, but anyway, X-Men. You keep saying that because you want me to take
boarding school for gifted students.
You want me to take you out in the jet, and I'm telling you, they don't let me take it out anymore after what happened last time. So it's just no Blackbird for you. Sorry. But getting back on track here, I teach creative writing workshop usually in the spring. And that's a really common thing that happens in workshop where somebody's reading someone's story. And what they mean to say is, I think this is such a cool idea that has lots of promise. And it feels like the world is that you're giving me here is complicated and interesting. But what they say is, I think that this could be a novel. Mm-hmm. And then the kid who gets that critique ends up saying after class or something and wants to meet with me. And they're like, so if I wanted to turn this into a novel, what would I have to do to it? And I, some part of me was like, no. They meant well. What they meant to say is that there is a richness to your story that they find really rewarding. Not that it should be a novel. Not everything benefits from being expanded that way. Be like, if you've got a good thing, like let it be what it can be and maybe what it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
That's definitely something that I wanted to do for Flowers was like, it wasn't, I think I started Flowers as a short story and very quickly it became a novella. Mm-hmm. Very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But I knew I didn't want it to be a novel. Because as much as there was world building, as much as there was a lot to explain, it still was in the realm of, no, I'm going to keep this short. I want to keep this to Aroxy, and I want her to experience the immediacy of what's going on right now. So
yeah, yeah. Well, we're back on track here with that, and I think we're probably not far away from kind of moving into our picks of the week. But before we do that, let's give a little background here for our listeners, so that when you're talking about Aroxy, they know who you're talking about, and they can kind of start getting into Flowers for the Sea.
Yeah. So Aroxy is, so my elevator pitch is, a woman is trapped on a boat with the last of humanity. And pregnant with something that may not be human. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. and so essentially there's a lot of information packed into it. So it's like, I feel like if I deviate anywhere outside of that, I will be in spoiler land.
Sure. Yeah. So, we said before, they're going to challenge you here. So let them keep it close to their chest. And you're just going to have to go to your local library and tell them to order you one. Tell them to order many. Go to your local establishment of book stuff. Find it.
So, yes. And it's on ebook too. Ebook and audiobook. So.
Yeah. All the audiobook. So Patrick and I are both devoted audiobook readers. So do you remember off the top of your head who your narrator is?
No, I don't, but she's got an amazing voice.
Okay.
It's through Dreamscape.
Oh, okay.
Now I gotta find her name because she's too good. As soon as I heard her,
only there was typing right now trying to find it.
Some sort of thing out there in the universe that we could use.
Name. It's just like a race at this point for which one of us is going to hit the buttons faster. So.
Well, I may have been trying to fill in the space while you both compete to,
maybe, yeah. But that would mean I don't know if I want to give you that credit. So. Oh, all right, almost there.
That deserves one of these.
Oh well, good job. It's Amina Karoma. Amina Karoma.
Amina Karoma, yes.
Yeah. I don't know that I know her work, so that's exciting too. I like finding out about new narrators.
Narrators are incredible. It's become such a field and such an art these days. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of them out there that I absolutely love. I always go back to Jefferson Mays, who does the the Expanse books for James S.A. Corey. And it always trips me out when I see him on a TV show. Because when I see him on a TV show, I'm like, oh, it's Jefferson Mays. You know, it's like, oh, this is so cool. It's like an extra special Easter egg kind of thing, because no one does those books. No one could do those books the way he does those books. And they tried because there was some sort of conflict where they couldn't get him to do a couple of the novellas. So they hired someone else. And those novellas bombed so hard and got so many complaints that they eventually re-recorded them with Jefferson. They actually brought him in and had him do them because they were like, nope, we can't do this. So he is the voice of that. So I love the art of the narrator at this point.
I feel bad because I'm blanking on a name here as well. But an audiobook, novella length audiobook I did recently that I really enjoyed is Fenders and Jelly Clark's, Ring Shout. The Ring Shout narrator is fantastic because there's such a range of different tones, different dialects. There's a German speaking Jewish character. There are various Gullah speaking characters. There's, you know, various Black Southern accents and white Southern accents and, you know, male and female and, monstrous and all sorts of things. And she just really, really got the full range.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. That was a really good one. All right, so since we're singing praises and love songs here anyway, I guess it's probably picks of the week time, huh?
Yes.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Picks of the week.
Patrick, do you want to lead on this one?
Sure. So I mentioned this to our guest last week when we weren't recording, I think. And I have actually already picked this once, but I'm picking it again because now it's done. They've completed the first season, and it's Only Murders in the Building. Mm. This is on Hulu, and this is Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. And you don't think that those three things go together. You do not believe that those three things go together. And I am here to tell you how horribly, incredibly wrong you are. Those three things go together so freaking well. This is just such an awesome show. Twist and turn. And the basic premise is that there's an apartment building in New York. Someone dies, and these three people come together to investigate because they're certain that it was not a suicide. They're certain that it was a murder. And as part of this, they're all true crime podcast listeners. They love to listen to true crime podcasts and have them, you know, the mysteries, and they all listen to the same one. So they decide to do a podcast about the murder in their building and their own exploration of that and them trying to figure out what happened. And there's tons of twists and turns throughout it. It's just an amazing show. I love this show. It's funny. It's smart. It's clever. The twists and turns are fantastic. And I actually held off on the last episode. I did a Sarah Chorn thing. If you don't know who Sarah Chorn is, look her up. I did a Sarah Chorn thing where I held off on watching the last episode for like a week and a half because I didn't want it to end. I didn't want the show to end. Yeah. I wanted it to continue. And I hope that they're going to do a second season. They set it up where they could. So Only Murders in the Building, Hulu, fantastic show. Go watch it.
Fantastic. All right. Cool. Zen, it's your turn.
I'm going to pick Horror Noir.
Ooh.
Both the documentary and the movie, which is a series of vignettes. It's just good. It's on Shudder. And it's funny. It's legit hair-raising. It's just really good, really entertaining. So I really highly recommend it.
A friend of mine and of the podcast, who's been on the podcast before, is a horror writer. And that is as difficult to say as Rurur from 30 Rock. And horror writer, Shannon Lawrence.
Yeah.
And Shannon has been posting all month about stuff on Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have Shudder, but apparently I need Shudder because that is,
yes,
there's Shudder so much stuff good. Going on there. Ugh.
It's definitely worth it. Yeah. I tell people, get the annual so you just don't worry about it month to month because it's worth the annual. It's honestly a great channel. It's a great channel.
You know, it's kind of funny. We cut the cord from cable. That's not totally accurate. We mostly cut the cord. There's like two fibers left holding it together because we found out this is extremely stupid, but this is the way businesses arrange like combo plans of stuff. We have Comcast and we also have Comcast's phone service. And because we have Comcast phone service and internet, when we contacted them and said, you know what, we don't want cable anymore for television, we're just going to use different streaming stuff. We found out that that would change us to some kind of different plan, which clearly they've invented because of all of the proliferation of streaming services. This is them trying to move with the market. Where in order to literally give up everything, it would actually cost us like $8 a month more.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we just cut down, and so we had like one cable box, period, that's not like not a DVR style one, but just real live TV cable box, then we could continue with exactly the price we had right now. Or no, it would be like $20 less, but we'd still have some kind of, fine, we'll do that. And so we did that, and that lives in the basement because we've got some workout equipment down here, and my husband likes to watch sports, and many different sports are hard to get on the different streaming services the way you mm-hmm. want. Especially if you're up for a certain team. And so he'll come down here and do stuff. But, you know, we were talking this morning, the Husbeast and I, about things. And I mentioned a show that I had heard was really good and that, you know, maybe we should watch it. And he wanted to know what service it was on. And I looked it up and it was on whatever the fuck, right? Not one of the ones that we have. And he's like, you know what? This is just not working out. Because we have Netflix, we have Hulu, we have Disney Plus. And yet... You know, because we don't have Apple, the Apple TV, and we don't have Shudder, and we don't have HBO Max, and we don't have, I don't know, pick something else out of your pocket, Peacock or whatnot. You know, there's still this like vast field of interesting stuff coming out that we're, and it's just, God damn it. This is a really long path to a god damn it here, so sorry everyone, there's not a lot of payoff. I didn't know that was worth your time.
I just saw someone post on like a meme kind of thing where they said I'm so glad I cut my cable so that I can spend $250 a month on streaming services.
they got us, man. They got us.
I predicted it. It's a mess. I have a similar story with Comcast because when I moved into this house, I wanted high speed internet, but I did not want Comcast cable. And they kept telling me, well, you got a bundle. You got a bundle with this. I'm like, no, I don't. I don't have to do any of that shit. I just want your high speed internet. That's all I want. I don't want anything else. And so I was moving from a condo to this house and I did the moving thing with them where it's supposedly you take your whatever account you had and you just move it to your new house. And so we did that. And one day my internet went down and I'm like, what the hell? What's going on? And so I call them and they're like, well, you haven't paid your bill. And I said, bullshit. I'm on auto pay. I've been on auto pay for 10 years. I don't do anything. It just comes out of my card. No, it's not. You've only been with us like 3 months and you haven't paid your bill once. We've been trying to call you on bubble and they give me this phone number. I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck number that is. Well, that's your bundled number. You bundled with us. You had high-speed internet and phone. I'm like, I don't have phone with you. They secretly put me on a bundle.
Oh, shit.
And they overwrote my phone number on my account with the new number that Comcast gave me that I didn't have a phone for. And they canceled my old account with all of my billing information, including my credit card, to create a new account. With the new bundle.
Patrick, wow. I think murder is the answer here.
Yes.
I mean, I think you gotta.
This is one of the reasons why I fucking hate Comcast so hard. Anyway, we need a pick from you now, Tracy, and
yeah,
I'm assuming it's not Comcast.
It is not Comcast. podcast, nor is it any one of 15 different streaming services. Kind of keeping with the vibe of us recording on Halloween weekend, and also kind of the, you know, Only Murders in the Building and Noir and all of that, I'm going to recommend a game. It's called Unspeakable Words. And as you might guess, it's a word game, but it's a word game with a Lovecraftian twist. The basic notion behind it is you get like a mess of cards that all have letters on them that are sort of like rendered in goofy looking pseudo, you know, creepy gothic fonts and stuff. And you have to make words. And if you make words, you score points. But if you have letters that don't allow you to spell a real word, they just make sort of like garbled, weird moans and stuff, don't worry. You can actually take a madness token, which looks like a very tiny Cthulhu statuette a la the original Lovecraft story. And so you can take that in order to play your frigging word salad mess. and so you can do that, and there'll be a penalty for your points at a certain point, but you still got to play. If you reach a point of taking a certain number of the madness idols, then your character goes permanently mad, and you can only play garbo words that you invent definitions for and whatnot, awesome. Because you are in this sort of like nightmare hellscape within your own mind, spewing chaos and madness. And weirdly, you can, if the other players are bad enough, you can still win after you lose your mind, because you only take a point penalty. It's not that you're no longer able to score. So there's, if you're someone who sort of likes the Lovecraftian mythos insofar as it's a vibe, but not necessarily Lovecraft for Lovecraft's sake, for lots of reasons, because there's lots of problems in that bucket. Which, you know, as someone who teaches the Ballad of Black Tom, I feel that I've sort of demonstrated a little bit of cred as far as deconstructing those goes. But if you like games, and if you like games that can potentially go a little bit goofy and where the theme actually sort of works with the mechanics, Unspeakable Words makes a pretty good semi-spooky, mostly goofy party game for your autumnal times with peoples.
Cool. That sounds
That's
cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. I like those kinds of games. I've played like Elder Sign and different ones.
It's really interesting. Fantasy Flight owns the rights to doing different Lovecraft themed games, like, you know, Innsmouth stuff and Arkham, whatever have you. And it is really interesting when you unpack the game and start looking through playable characters, the way that they recognize that they are in conversation as a 21st century manufacturer and game designer with something that even in its own time was sort of highly problematic and sort of steeped in a lot of and a lot of sort of ignorance and fear. And so the characters that you have, there are queer characters you can play, and there are people of color, and there are disabled characters, and there's just a range of different characters that they've folded really effectively into that whole sort of cosmic horror mythos, as essentially a kind of commentary on the source material and as a way of kind of like reasserting what people of the world really look like, but still within the stuff that generated that world that gets certain types of readers and certain types of fans so engaged. So it's kind of cool that they've been able to do what they've been able to do to kind of converse with the original property in a productive way.
That's awesome.
All right, folks. So I am so delighted that we got to spend some time with you, Zin. Thank you so much. If you're interested in finding Zin's work, I want to give them a chance to tell you where to find them.
So my website needs a lot of help.
You're the second guest in a row to say that.
Yeah. But for ease, you can go to my Twitter, which is my Twitter handle is at IntelligentTwat. And you can find a listing there for all of my work.
Nice. Awesome. All right. Thanks, Zin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
All right.
And it's that time of the show where the episode is over, but you want more. Well, you can't stay here, but you don't have to go home either. Unless you want to go home, in which case you can totally go home. But you still need something to listen to, right? Because this episode is over. Well, have I got a deal for you. It's called Beyond the Trope.
And it's a podcast that's eerily similar to this one. Anyway, Giles and Michelle are the forces behind Beyond the Trope. And they have a new episode every week, just like we have a new episode every week. They talk with best-selling authors, award-winning actors, and other leaders in the creative community, and then share those interviews over at their website, beyondthetrope.com. Isn't that convenient? So again, if you're looking for something else to listen to now that this episode is over, go check them out at beyondthetrope.com. They even have a Patreon with extra stuff for people who back them, just like we do. So if you like what they do, visit their Patreon and back them. And as always, if you like what we do, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/functionalnerds and back us. We have tons of cool things. Now, I've got this theory about Doctor Who Flux. It all begins back in a 1976 episode in the Tom Baker... Wait, no, don't fade out. This stuff is important. People want to hear this.